Nation.
Ladies and gentlemen of Lafayette,
the Hammered Down Show with Jared Jussolaitis is Lafayette's number one sports show.
Yes, I'm excited!
He totally went to Jared.
The voice of Lafayette sports.
The cream of the crop! Nobody does it better.
Send us your thoughts on the text line at 765-447-4080.
Now go to that voodoo that you do so well!
And Sunday right here on the Hammer. We got you covered. So, there'll be no Hammer Down Show the rest of the week, so you guys can kick back and you can enjoy the games wherever you're at. If you're working, you're on the job site, whatever, we got you covered, okay? On the show today, as promised, Brian Tonsoni is back from Delphi Bracketology. How did the kids do with their brackets this year? They were up against some like 200-odd brackets. All kinds of different professionals throughout the country. So how did they do? Well, we got Brian Tonsoni on to talk a little bit about that. And we'll get some of our questions answered, too. Like, you know, what are we looking for here? What was the committee looking at? What was some of the rationale? Why did teams like Michigan State make it in? Why didn't Indiana State make it in? And who got the biggest screw job here in terms of their seedings? We'll talk to him, and we'll get his take there. Again, they did very, very well this year, so very proud of those guys. Let's go ahead and get started a lot like we always do. We'll kick it off with our need-to-know news. I should hit that button first. There we go.
Here's your need-to-know news.
That thing there wasn't going to fire. All right. Add another one to the long list of Zach Edey accomplishments. He is a first-team All-America now, according to the NABC. That is the coaches. And then later today, he got the sports writers' first-team All-America as well. 4 for 4. He is a consensus All-American back-to-back. First time Purdue guy has done that since Len Robinson. No love for Braden Smith on either of these lists. Doesn't make first, second, or third team. I do not believe the coaches did an honorable mention. But the sports writers did not have Braden on there. Boo Booey and Terrence Shannon Jr. Well, they made honorable mention there. But yeah, in terms of the NABC, nothing. No love for Braden. That's cool. Got no problem with that. It only motivates them more. I don't think anybody else from the Big Ten. Yeah, nobody else from the Big Ten. Both, you know, Terrence Shannon Jr. I know he got some love from, was it the Sporting News, the AP? But he didn't make either one of these lists. He did make honorable mention from the sports writers. Again, the coaches didn't have it. First team was R.J. Davis, Zach Edey, Dalton Connect, Tristan Newton, Jamal Sheed from Houston. I got no problem with that. Hunter Dickinson, a third team All-American there. I have no problem with that. Softball, baseball doing battle today on the west side this afternoon. Go on out and check them out. Over at Bittinger, it's Eastern Illinois at 5 p.m. at 4 o'clock at Alexander. They host UIC. It's one of those $3 midweek things for baseball where you get the $3 concessions. Select concession stuff. $3 tickets. Get on out there and support baseball. Both teams at home again this weekend hosting Big Ten opponents. Purdue wrestling out to Kansas City for the 2024 NCAA Championships. They finished 9th in the Big Ten. 5 place winners, 5 auto qualifiers for the Big Ten Championships. Headlined by Matt Ramos. You remember he was the, you know, the big shocker there, made it the championship. He's a 4 seed for the second straight season. And he's trying to capitalize on that runner-up spot from last year. So all that action starts tomorrow at noon. Best of luck to them. Purdue men's hoops will find out who its opponent is later on tonight when Grambling State takes on Montana State. You'll hear that game right here on 101.7 The Hammer. Montana State right now a 4.5-point favorite, 6:40 tip time. That game will be followed by Boise State and Colorado, where the Buffs are -3.5. Spring training continues. The Cubs take a 4-1 loss to the Diamondbacks. Kyle Hendricks, 4 2/3, 7 hits. He had 4 earned there, 3 Ks. No walks, though. I'm looking to the bright side of things here. Lighters on the mound this afternoon when they go up against the A's. We're 8 days away from opener at Texas down in Arlington. The Wrigley opener, April the 1st against Colorado. White Sox, yesterday off, remain winless in their last 4. Take on the Reds today. Another rough going here for your Chicago Blackhawks. 6-2 that final last night. Foligno and Korshinski is the guys that scored goals for the Blackhawks. I mean, they just got pounded in this one. Absolutely pounded in this one. So, the Hawks slide continues. They get the Ducks in Anaheim tomorrow. And then NBA action tonight. Pacers in Detroit take on Jaden Ivey's Pistons. The Pacers 10.5-point favorites. And the Bulls have the night off tonight. And there you go. That's what I got. Today's Need to Know News for Wednesday, the 20th of March. All right. We split on our first half unders last night. Virginia mercifully helped us out to make sure that we split the night. We had that Howard and Wagner game. We were cruising there. That over-under live with like around 6 minutes left was down to like 52. And then they start running up and down the court and just chucking threes. 1 second on the shot clock. Let me shoot this NBA three. It goes in. Like, that was rough. So what are we doing tonight? I'll tell you this, I'm not touching that over-under first half and the over-under total in that first game here. Montana State and Grambling State, it's gone too low. Like KenPom has it like 7 runs higher, 7 runs, 7 points higher than what you have on the over-under right now. I don't like that. I am going to go with Grambling to cover, though, at 4.5. I don't think this is going to get too out of hand. I think Grambling will slow this down as much as possible and make it a half-court game. Montana State needs to knock down the threes, and it seems like that Grambling can slow them down. So I'll take the 4.5 in that one. But I think Montana State probably still wins. But I'm going to go ahead and take the 4.5. If you still like Montana, then just take the money line. Take your -210. And then go parlay that with Colorado tonight. I like Colorado to win. I mean, Buffalo just have the defenders in this one. By the way, I know the Mountain West, right? I know we had the win, but here, Mountain West squads 23-46-2 against the spread in the big dance. I'm taking Colorado -2.5, and I'm taking Grambling getting 4.5 tonight. Those are my plays. That's what I want to run to. And in all honesty, too, I did not touch the NIT last night because I had the kids and I didn't get to NIT betting. And I also didn't prepare a whole lot, but gosh darn it. I'm going to money line some of these guys. Like Seton Hall has to get money line with Indiana State tonight. I mean, just off the bat, two teams that great cases to be in the tournament, playing at home. Both are kind of big favorites, 7.5 and 8.5. I don't know if you noticed this, but last night, not a lot of covers in the NIT. So I'll just be safe. I'll take Seton Hall and Indiana State, both to win. Just play it safe with this one. That'll be my action in the NIT. All right, good show here still to come. Brian Tonsoni, Delphi Bracketology, is going to join us next. Very interested to see, hey, how did they do in bracket matrix? Again, we got like a couple hundred brackets in the country. What did they say, 342? Oh, no, that's the average score. Sorry. I mean, there are 179. Ooh. Yeah. How'd they do? Where'd they get it wrong? What did they find out that the tournament committee valued the most? All this stuff. I got to hear from them. It's coming up next. Stick around. Brian Tonsoni, Delphi Bracketology is next. On the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7 The Hammer. Welcome back. It is the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. I'm Jared Jesselitis. Coming up tonight, the second round of the play-in, the first four, the first, whatever the heck we're calling it. I don't even know anymore. But, you know, those consequential basketball games, including Montana State and Grambling State, Purdue's potential opponents, will all be right here on 101.7 The Hammer. And then, of course, Thursday and Friday, we'll have you locked in with wraparound coverage throughout the entire four-day weekend. That will be college basketball. We go to the Blue Fox Heating Cooling Hammerhead Hotline. Brian Tonsoni from Delphi Bracketology is on with us here. Brian, it's great to have you back on. Congratulations on another season there over at Delphi Bracketology, which if folks listen to the program, they know this is a high school. It's now a class. It started as a club. It's now a class, right, Brian, where you guys, you sit down, you go through all the data, you argue about this stuff, and then you guys actually fill out your own bracket and set it live, and you compete with hundreds of other brackets across the country. How did you guys do this year? I know the bracket matrix added it all up there. Where did you guys place this year?
Yeah, so in creating the bracket that everyone is filling out now, right before noon tomorrow, we tried to predict that very form, and we finished tied for eighth out of 226, Jared.
That's very nice.
Thank you. We had 44 teams seeded correctly. We had another 17 one-seed line off, and we had six teams correctly in the field but off a couple of lines, especially the Mountain West teams we missed on. And we missed on Oklahoma, which was our last team in, and we had tweeted out before Selection Sunday that if there's a team that surprises us and is left out, it would be Oklahoma. And so we feel very, very good about our performance this year. And that makes in 8 years we've turned it in, we have a first, a third, an eighth, an 11th, and a 14th. So that's five top 15 finishes. And in one of the years we didn't finish in the top 15, we had our second highest score ever. And we were kind of in the average of that year because everyone else scored well, but we still had our second highest. So things are really churning here. Kind of a shameless plug there for our group, but I'm really proud of our seniors and everyone for the time and work that they put in, and we're getting some pretty good results.
You were pretty good with your first four out too. You told us on this program a couple weeks ago Indiana State would have to win their conference tournament, and I said, you're crazy, it can't be right. And lo and behold, they were on the outside looking in. You had St. John's out. You very wisely put Virginia out, even though they yes. somehow got in. Seton Hall also in your first four out, so really a tremendous job. When you look back at what the committee put together versus what you guys had, what were some of the did you find that there was a specific type of criteria that they really focused on? Do you feel like they were consistent in that criteria? Kind of take what you guys and the rationale for where you put a majority of your teams versus what they actually did. And was there some kind of rationale, a metric or something you felt like they relied on more that you guys didn't? What did you learn about the selection committee this year?
Yeah, normally I'm a big proponent of the net and of the selection committee. I think it's a tough job to do. This year, I thought they faltered a little bit, and it's really not sour grapes because we kind of matched it a little bit. But I thought they made some glaring mistakes, and they're never going to be inconsistent because it really comes down to a pocket of four teams being voted in at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so depending on which teams they're voting on, a certain criteria may pop up as being more important in the eight seed line than it was on the one seed line. I don't know why that has to be. I think they can still vote consistently. So the one that you're asking about is the non-conference strength of schedule and wins against non-conference opponents. They really used that to downplay the Mountain West and have them, you know, three of them on the 10 seed line, two of them in play-in games, New Mexico as an 11 seed line. So it seemed like once they got down past the eight seed line, they were really looking at non-conference wins, quality wins in quad one. Well, if you applied that to the top, Purdue's the number one seed, which we've been telling you all along, and we used that very criteria to keep Purdue a number one seed despite their loss because they just were so much better than everyone. And so it bothers me as a college basketball fan to hear the committee chair come on and say, well, we didn't like the Mountain West because they didn't beat anybody in the non-conference. And then I look at Purdue and had five top 15 non-conference wins, all of them in neutral or road situations. And I'm going, huh? So I still think they're – I don't want to know exactly the formula for the soup of this mix because then bracketology isn't needed, right? It's a scoreboard, and everyone can track it easily. So I like some of the mystery. But I want the mystery to be consistent. And they don't have to tell us ahead of time, but afterwards, if you are really praising non-conference quality wins at the back end, you should also do that at the front end. And this is the first year I thought they were – I've been using a word I want to be careful with as lazy. I think they just followed the process and didn't use common sense. And anything in life, sometimes you got to go against the process if common sense is the better option. I didn't think the committee did a good job of that this year.
Yeah, you know, the Mountain West historically has not been great in this tournament, and I get that. Maybe some of that stuff factors into it, but you're right. You know, the same, you're using one element of the ingredients here against the conference, yet, you know, the Big 12, all of a sudden that kind of got thrown out the window. It's not used against them in the same way it was used against the Mountain West, which is, yeah, I get
exactly.
You'd like it to be. It's like calling a basketball game. If you're going to call it tight, if you're going to call touch fouls, that's fine. But let's call it through the whole game. Let's not all of a sudden just change things up halfway through.
Totally agree. I think the Mountain West really it was unfair, and what they did last year in a tournament should not count, and what any school did in previous years should not count to where you're seated. And like I said, the consistency they didn't. I mean, you look at some of those teams, and Iowa State kind of got a little bit. They didn't play a great non-conference schedule. They got the last two. So, again, I think the process of when you vote four teams in at a time, and then you kind of compare them one to another, I would like to take a look at that process. And so many of the bracketologists that I follow and in our community, you know, they have regular jobs. And I think their brackets were really pretty well done. And the committee watches basketball all year long. They have their regular jobs too, but they watch basketball all year long, and then they have a week with computer experts there to bracket. It just, I think the process of when they vote things in has to be reevaluated, or once they vote teams in, then be able to mix it up a little bit more than what they do, because I think this was a poorly seeded tournament. For the first time in a long time, I felt that way. I'm usually defending the committee to all the Dick Vitales and everyone out there that are shouting, and the coaches that are shouting about not being in. I'm usually a defender of that, but not this year.
Brian Tonsoni, Delphi Bracketology, here on our Blue Fox Heating Cooling Hammerhead Hotline. Give me a team here, due to the seeding here, got screwed over in your estimation. I got a pretty good guess at who that is. If I'm putting money on somebody, it's probably Boise State that had to go down to Dayton here, and they'll play tonight, but give me a team or maybe two here where you're like, boy, the committee really turned the screws on these guys.
Yeah, one I think is Iowa State at the top. I think anyone in the Mountain West, Boise State, Colorado State, New Mexico, all of those got raw deals. But one of the things that really stinks too is, you know, when now a 7 seed has to play that quality team that's on the 10 seed line, you know, so it filters down a little bit there as well. I do think, you know, you look at BYU had to go to a 6 because they can't play on Sundays. Well, that makes life a little difficult for Illinois, and because now Illinois has to play a 5 seed in round 2 instead of a 6 seed. That's kind of one that sticks out. I think I really think Purdue got a pretty good draw, especially with Kansas and their best player now falling to the wayside. But, you know, I think for the most part, the top part of the bracket is pretty solid. I just think that I think FAU deserves to be a lot lower, too. That was one that I thought was misseeded. So mostly I'm more bothered with the misseeds, but I don't know if anyone really got a tough deal. I know a lot of people think UConn has a tough road with 3 conference championships in Auburn, Illinois, and Iowa State in their bracket. But sometimes that works against people too when you work the bracket. So I don't know that anyone at the top kind of got a raw deal, other than maybe playing some good teams a little bit earlier. The 2 seeds was playing some of these 10 seeds that got dropped down. I just think that's a potential problem.
Brian, with the news of McCullers being out for the tournament, look, I saw what happened during football season. I saw what they did to Florida State. In your opinion, if Kansas had announced that McCullers was out for the tournament before they did the seeding, does Kansas get into some trouble? Do they drop them down further because of that?
I think they were. We really messed that up. We might have won. We were 5 points off winning this thing. And we had discussed that, and we thought Kansas was a strong 2 before the injuries. And so we dropped them down to a 3. We discussed dropping them even more to a 4 because of the unknown, and wish we had. So I do wonder if they would have dropped one more line. But I think the lowest they could have gone is to a 5.
That's interesting because, like I said, we saw what happened during football season. I don't blame them for not revealing that until after the seed list. I do the exact same thing. But that was unfortunate for Kansas, and it is what it is, and we're into this year. We're talking with Brian Tonsoni here on the Blue Fox Heating and Cooling Hammerhead Hotline. There is one Big Ten team that people seem to be, you know, how? Michigan State is that team in there. I know a lot of fans here locally would have loved to seen Indiana State make it, maybe think that Indiana State more deserving than Michigan State, even though Michigan State did beat them head-to-head. But kind of tell me a little bit, like, how close was Michigan State to not being in this thing, and how close was Indiana State to being in this thing?
Well, Michigan State actually got a 9, which was the committee thought a little bit, you know, more highly of them than most bracket experts. We had them as a 10. Their metrics, how they played a lot, they lost a lot, but they were competitive in those games, and I do think that matters. I mean, we saw that last night in Virginia. Only one time did they lose a game that was not 10 points or more deficit, and their metrics were at 51 and Michigan State's was at 24. And you could say all you want, and there are some really good arguments against the net and is it the right thing, but I do think how you play matters just as much as resume. And the Virginia case is there. Virginia lost some games, didn't have a great resume, didn't have great metrics, and just got in. Michigan State played competitive basketball, just lost a lot. And they schedule strong. And that's what the committee likes. So their numbers were very, very close to others with 9 quad 1 wins, 1 and 2 wins. A lot of teams, Northwestern had 9, Nevada 8, Boise State 9. So when you look at that mix and then you see that their offense and defensive efficiencies were top 25, I do think they belong. A 9 is fine. I would have placed them more at a 10. I don't think that's awful. Indiana State got a tough deal because of their conference schedule. And, you know, if those bid thieves didn't happen late Saturday night, Indiana State has a chance of being in the tournament regardless, and I think that would have been fair. So, Michigan State, I think, is deserving to be in, but, you know, maybe a little too high in the seed list.
Well, they do get a second-round matchup with UNC, so that's not exactly the nice thing. And Izzo, as a 7 seed or worse, has not performed well in the tournament in his history. Brian Tonsoni, Delphi Bracketology, tremendous job this year with the bracket, buddy. I know it's getting harder and harder to get in that top 10 because they keep on getting more and more brackets in there, but I think you and the kids did an absolutely great job with this. The ISC show has been great all season as well. The website's great, and just well done by everybody. Congratulations to you guys. I know that November can't come around soon enough again for you guys.
Yeah, for a couple of reasons. We get to do bracket work, and we get to start talking to you again, which is always a good thing. So thank you for allowing us to share, and hope your listeners can gain something from us. And we're still putting out some content. We'll have a viewing guide out today. I did put out today a 76-team bracket talking about expansion. We're not a big favorite of that, but I did want to see what it would look like. That's already on the webpage, too. So stick with us here to the end of March, and then you can go to your baseball sites. But, Jared, thank you very much for your time and your support of Delphi Bracket.
I love having you guys on. Just nobody talk to me before Halloween, okay?
All right.
Take care, Brian. Thanks so much. Big thank you to Brian Tonsoni. Great stuff. We're supposed to have him on Monday, my fault. But we got him on today, which is great, and good to hear from him. Good stuff. Glad to hear that the kids had a lot of hard work and to finish where they did. It was just 5 points off of first place. I mean, it was tight at the top there. So congratulations to them. Great stuff there to see. And you know, great explanation there of how the committee kind of selectively applied things like net and quad wins and stuff like that to certain teams, but then, you know, there seemed to be a line of demarcation there. And I said, okay, now we're looking down here and we'll apply it differently, which is it's kind of crazy. Did you pick up that BYU thing? They don't play on. I did not know that. How does that work? But interesting stuff from him. Great job. Congratulations to everybody over there at Delphi. All right, so tonight, Purdue's going to find out who their opponent's going to be. That's, 6:40, I believe we said, with the tip-off tonight. Grambling State and Montana State. For the record, I do not believe it matters who Purdue plays. I think that they are better than both of these teams. They better be better than both these teams. But that doesn't mean you can't look at both of them and decide, okay, well, which one's more ideal for you. So I went through a lot of the metrics where I could find them. And the metrics favor Montana State. That's why they're in a 4.5-point favorite. Shot quality's got this one kind of close. 342nd in Grambling State to 306 in Montana State. These are, two of the bottom four teams in KenPom that made the tournament? Grambling State is very slow in their offense. We told you at the top of the show, we anticipate them kind of slowing it down, mucking it up a little bit. And if that's the case, maybe, you know, that's how they win. Not a great offense either at adjusted 297. Montana's 231. Montana 198 on the defense. Grambling State 197. The only difference here is Grambling actually went out and played teams. Montana State did not. Now, since I have that sample size, you go back and you say, all right, you know they probably were a sacrificial lamb early on in the season. How did they do? Okay, let's just go with teams we know are in the tournament here. At Colorado, 95-63. Iowa State, 92-37. Ooh. Dayton 76-46, Washington State 83-65. That's not great. The Drake. Oh, I love the Drake. 68-56. They lost that one. So when they've taken them on, it's not been ideal. They beat somebody called Bible Studies 84-72. I feel like you should be a little bit better than that. They beat somebody, Champion Christian, 113-73. So I'm not totally thrilled. Neither one of these teams has the bodies to deal with Zach Edey. Grambling has two guys at 6'11", one's at 255, one's at 235. Neither one of these teams rebound very well at all. That's clearly a weakness. Grambling's 428 in rebounding. And Montana State is 469. I didn't realize it went down that low. That's not good at all. Both these teams allow a little bit over 70 points. And Grambling just doesn't put up the points. But again, you take a look at the non-conference being as strong as it was, and you understand maybe why they did not score as many points in season as you'd like. You know, take a look at Montana State. Like I said, they average 75 points a game, 469th in rebounds. Not great. They don't assist much. They're a three-guard team. That's how they score. They really don't do that at the rim, as opposed to Grambling, who is actually pretty good at finishing at the rim. Even though they really don't play a ton of interior basketball, they also rely on guards to score. They're a lot better at finishing at the rim. Again, I don't really know that you can take one of these ones and say, hey, this is much more dangerous for Purdue. Because I think defensively, both these teams aren't great. The thing about Grambling that scares me is they have played the quality competition, so they are somewhat prepared. Somewhat prepared for that. But even then, when they took on teams that were of any consequence, they got buried. Neither one of these teams has what I think you fear the most, and that is some guard that can go off for 20-some-odd points in a ball game. Montana State has a guy, Robert Ford III, averages about 16 points a game. He was hot in the Big Sky tournament. 27 in the quarterfinal, 19 in the semifinal, 22 in the final over Montana. But outside of that, getting up into the 20s really hasn't been his thing. He did it a few times during the season, but nothing crazy. He did drop 30 on Montana back in mid-January. So a guy that's got some talent, but again, these teams just aren't going to be, they're not going to be deep enough. I mean, Grambling's leading scorer is just over 13 points per game. Dozier, the guard. I really can't make my mind up on who should be better here, better suited. I kind of wish, I feel like you pull for Grambling, maybe, just because you've seen what they've done against tournament teams and it hasn't been good. They have the lower ratings, the worst defense. Maybe that's the way to go. But last year, I rooted for Fairleigh Dickinson because I thought that was the better matchup, and then that did not go our way. So I'm not going to be rooting for anybody in particular. I think Purdue beats both these teams. I know, big stretch to say that, right? I've really gone out on a limb there. But I honestly never thought that it was going to matter who played Purdue. And I said this before Selection Sunday. I think with what happened, I think with the anger that resulted after Fairleigh Dickinson, that I wholeheartedly expect this team to go out there and put up 100 points and just absolutely destroy whoever they take on. Just to send the message. Just to exercise that demon. I think that's coming. Like a whole season of anger, a whole year of anger, and being reminded about that even more. Now you get the Braden Smith snubs on the All-American list. That will fuel him even more. I think they're going to let out a lot of emotion in that first game. A lot. And we'll see what happens on Sunday. One game at a time. But I've been saying this for months now. Purdue gets the one seed. I feel very bad for whoever has to be the 16 seed to play them, because you know they're just, they're literally no mercy. Literally no mercy. There will be no fun had by Purdue. It will be pure anger and rage. Zach Edey may destroy an entire hoop. I don't know. But it wouldn't surprise me. We're going to take our final break. Hang tight. We'll come back. Some things we may have missed. We got a big name in the Big Ten who's just hit the portal. I'll tell you who it is and more. And things we may have missed next. It's the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Welcome back to the Hammer Down Show on 101.7 The Hammer and 101.7thehammer.com. Jared Jesulaitis with you right now. All right, let's get some of the things that we may have missed. More transfer portal guys all across the conference here. CJ Gunn in the transfer portal. Thanked Indiana on his social media. They got a lot of openings down there. They got a lot of openings. I'm not going to sit here and dance on a grave or anything like that. It's tough, especially in this day and age when the rumor is you're looking at $200K to $400K for a good guard in the portal these days. Can happen to anybody. But, on the other hand, better you than me. Is that fair? I'm good on that? Better them than us? Okay, I'm not going to revel in it. I mean, you got the kid, you got the Iowa transfer kid. He was going to go to Iowa, then he decommitted, went to Alabama, went to the portal, went to Iowa, allegedly got some money here, and then turned around and went right back to Alabama. It's crazy out there. Add that a big Big Ten name. Rutgers. Cliffy. He's gone. He's in the portal. Shirley Donovan says somebody lured him out. We'll find out who, I guess. I mean, obviously, somebody's lured him out. That's why he jumped into the portal. But the portal action remains hot today. Know how much I like it, man. I just don't. Again, I think it's great that the kids can get out of bad situations. However, we know what a majority of it's being used for now. It's not for getting out of bad situations, for getting paid. Shout out to Luca Garza. Did we like it when he played at Iowa? Absolutely not. Did he pick Purdue to go all the way in his March Madness bracket? Absolutely he did. So we thank you for that, man. President's got to work on his bracket, man. Way too much chalk. Way too much chalk. I don't know. There's been some really weird... The March Madness account has been getting all these celebrity pickers. And, you know, I like it when you do the former players. That's great. You know, the president does one. And it's great. They always do that kind of stuff. But you go through and you see who else they get to fill out these things. I mean, there's other athletes, Kyle Busch. Which you would think, with his wife being a Purdue grad, he would have Purdue in the Final Four. He does not. It's a lot for that jerk. Max Homa. Trey Kennedy has a Purdue winning it all the way. They had like Dr. Pimple Popper in here. We, for some reason, have Evander Holyfield filling out brackets. Like, what, what are we doing here with some of these brackets? Like, we couldn't get a better celebrity than Dr. Pimple Popper to pick a bracket. Joey Votto took Purdue. I may have to do a 180 on him. Dr. Pimple Popper. Doug Eddard made a pick too, and he did take Purdue to get to the Final Four, which I do appreciate. But he had us losing to Marquette. Buddy, it's not going to make up for what you did to me. It's not going to make up for it. That's going to do it for us here on the Hammer Down Show. Again, we're off the rest of the week. We will have the second two, first four games for you tonight, starting at about a little after 6:30. And then tomorrow, we'll have coverage all day Thursday, all day Friday for you. You'll be able to hear the game, so you're working, you're traveling, whatever you got to do. Keep us on. We'll have you covered. All of those games, wraparound coverage for you. Tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, right here on 101.7 The Hammer. Enjoy it, people. I know I'm going to be. I'll see you back here on Monday. We'll see where we stand back here on...